Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to another edition of Dishin' and Swishin' Going Philly Style. First, let me welcome my partner on this, the co-host and the guru of women's basketball writers, and has forgotten more things than we'll ever know about the women's game, Mel Greenberg. Mel, how are you today?
Fine. How are you? Glad to be back, actually, after a long absence of us trying to do this, but we'll probably pick it up as we come
exactly.
down to March Madness.
Exactly. March Madness is coming. We're nearing the end of February, and I can't think of a better guest that the woman that personifies Philly basketball is on the line with us, the latest finalist for the Naismith Hall of Fame, Coach Dawn Staley of South Carolina. Coach, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you
guys for having me. Big things going on, Coach, between the success of the team this year, Naismith. You're having a pretty darn good start to 2013, huh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Naismith nomination really, caught me by surprise. I actually wasn't thinking about it. I know Mel often sends me text messages, about big upcoming events like that. So I wasn't really thinking about it until I got a text after one of our practices, and one of my former players congratulated me, and I'm like, on what? And then she was like, Hall of Fame, and I was thinking, she was late on the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, but it was Danae Smith, and I looked on Twitter, and obviously I saw a lot of things about it on Twitter, so you find some things out in the strangest places.
Twitter seems to be a great news source for all these things today.
It is.
Mel, you've been beating the drum for Coach Staley for Naismith. How does it feel to know that this finally happened and you've covered that area for so long, and it's so deserving?
Yeah, well, I think it's tremendous. And one of the things I guess I can get to ask you is that the other Philadelphia connection that got in is your longtime idol, Dawn, and, from the 70s, played for the 76ers, Mo Cheeks.
That one made me smile, too, because he's been my all-time favorite player, all-time. And a lot of people don't know about Cheeks, but certainly I think basketball enthusiasts, know what he meant to the Philadelphia 76ers and then the city of Philadelphia, because he was the point guard that brought us a world championship.
That's one of the things. Sometimes it just seems that the point guards, because of the nature of the statistical beast, don't get the credit that they deserve in situations. And Mo Cheeks is a perfect example of that, because you're right. He was so important on those Sixer teams. But you always hear about everybody else.
You do. Mo Cheeks was the glue. I think he was the quiet assassin. He went about his business, not wanting the spotlight, just doing his job. I thought he did an excellent job at just managing, the different personalities that the Sixers had. And it was, it was a great thing to see him just orchestrate us to winning a world championship.
It sort of sounds like somebody else I know that kind of did that in Virginia.
We had parallels. I did try to model my game after him, although, I was probably a little more flashy than Cheeks, but certainly wanted to just emulate the way he went about business. I know off the floor, I was more not wanting the spotlight. I didn't really want the spotlight on the floor. I just wanted to win, and when you approach it that way, it does minimize your importance on the floor. But at the same time, the people that really watch it and understand basketball know, the importance of having a great point guard on your team.
Mel?
Yes, I was going to say, speaking of Virginia, I noticed recently I saw a picture of San Diego State and your backcourt mate there, who's in coaching now, Tommy Reese. you guys, an assistant of Beth Burns out there, have they talked to you at all about playing a game at some point?
No, we actually haven't talked about it, but I know I talked to Beth, you know, right before Tammy was about to get in the business, and then I talked to Tammy a little bit before she took the job, talked to her a little bit after she took the job, but we didn't talk about scheduling a game as of yet. That's a long way from South Carolina, though.
You're right. Yeah. You know, talking about winning the lead of the SEC race, and, you know, even if the – I know you were in a couple games, you were right there and it got by, but it's got to make you at least feel real hopeful that you can do great things when the tournament begins in a couple weeks.
You know, for us, we're just quietly going about our business, honestly. You know, I think, you know, a lot of people didn't anticipate us having the type of success that we're having this year. But, I mean, we knew the foundation has been laid, you know, just being here for now 5 years. You get a sense of your program and the players in your program wanting to win. You know, I think the culture has changed, and we do view ourselves as being winners, and every time we step on the floor, you're gonna get our best effort. Whether we win, lose, or draw, usually we come out, you know, ready to rock and roll and play for 40 minutes. It's not very often, you know, knock on wood, that, you know, that we don't give it our all and play basketball the way it's supposed to be played.
You know, you take out that Tennessee game, which was an aberration, and, you know, you've got four losses by 12 points. You know, one little shot here and there, and we could be looking at, you know, a top five ranking right now.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. But I think those losses really, they don't define us, but they do give us a measuring stick as to, you know, and a teaching tool, you know, to help us understand what separates us from being one of the, you know, most talked about teams in the country. And it is, you know, 12 points. It is a play, you take a play here or there, a defensive breakdown or a missed shot. I think for the most part it's been, you know, having somebody be able to make a play at the end of the game. That's been our nemesis. We're getting a little bit better with, you know, our offense as far as, you know, scoring a little bit more. But when a game is on the line, you got to have players who can make plays.
You know, Coach, I take a look at some of the numbers and things, and one thing that really kind of jumps at me this year is it seems like you are starting to make some inroads in football country with getting the kids and the local area motivated and excited, as attendance numbers seem to be looking, you know, pretty strong for the home games.
They are. I think our marketing department has done a tremendous job at trying to get people in the stands, because it is a hard sell when, you know, our football team is as good as it is. You know, our baseball team, you know, as good as it is. And, you know, basketball, it hasn't, you know, really gotten to a place where, you know, people want to come out and watch it. They told me if you win basketball games, they're going to come see you. And slowly but surely, they have done that. You know, I think winning does help. I think it will help also, you know, when Frank Martin gets his team off the ground and rocking and rolling. So I think, you know, from an administrative standpoint, you know, they're putting the money into basketball because they want all their teams to be national championships. And, you know, not only do they, you know, talk about it, they do financially put their money where their mouth is, whether it's hiring great coaches, whether it's, you know, giving us a budget to recruit nationally. So it is a place in which, you know, I think it is a sleeping giant, you know, where South Carolina was, you know, everybody's easy win. It was a doormat. We were the doormat of the SEC, but now, you know, I think, you know, people look at us a little differently, and, you know, because of, you know, how close games have been and also games that we've won over the past couple of years.
So how does it feel to be the second most intense coach in the basketball program? Now, this is the first for you. There's somebody that's more intense than you.
No, actually, it brings me back to my Temple days when we had Coach Chaney. So I'm used to being playing second fiddle to being the less intense one.
I'm glad you gave me the great segue that was just coming up there when you mentioned Temple, Dawn. I don't know if you talked to Tanya recently, because it's been a bit of a struggle this year, you know, with the young roster, and you know, some things are happening that haven't really happened since maybe your second or third year when you had to hit that rebuilding a little bit. Especially when you had instant success when you got there. Any advice you've been giving her, or has she been commiserating? I mean, I know she calls Jamel in Cincinnati, and they go back and forth.
Tanya too much about Temple. You know, I think it's something where, you know, it's hard. You know, that's the place that I left, and is where she is right now. And then, you know, I think Tanya is a natural born leader, a winner. You know, she's come from, you know, a pedigree of a great coach in Gino. So I think she'll get it going. They're young. You know, when you have a young basketball team, you know, it's hard to, you know, put your stamp on them because they're trying to figure out themselves. And you go through that. But I think that, you know, she still has them playing hard. You know, when you can still get them to play hard and kind of make some, you know, some mistakes as they're growing, you still have them. You know, you don't sandbag the season. You just try to continue to grow. And I think they've been growing. They've been growing. I've been watching them from afar, but not, you know, don't have too many in-depth conversations with Tanya about her team.
Coach.
Right.
Go ahead, Mel.
I was just going to say, speaking of Philly people, there's been some interesting doings up north in the Atlantic 10 with Steffi Gately coaching Fordham. They just beat St. Joe in overtime. Tough loss for St. Joe as they're fighting for seeds down the stretch. And I know Fordham has a former player. I guess he spent a brief time with you. She was also Maryland and the Strickland kid. She's been one of the difference makers up there. What can you say about her game?
Mara's she's an offensive player. You know, she can put the ball in the hole. You know, I think she's got a great coach in Stephanie. Stephanie knows this game. You know, she's been coaching for a very long time. She's been very successful. So am I surprised? Not at all surprised at what she's been able to do in Atlantic 10. I know she knows that league, even though she hasn't coached in a long time. But, you know, she's a winner. Marv's a winner. And I'm happy that, you know, both of them are finding success. But probably Steph probably wanted that game more than any, just because you want to beat your old stomping grounds.
Right. You know, we mentioned Tennessee a bit. Speaking of other surprises, beginning of the year, there was not a lot of expectation on Tennessee. And, you know, you're kind of looking, Holly might be in a, you know, might be a contender for Coach of the Year just as well as they've done. Have they surprised you? Or when you had to do your coaches' votes preseason, you kind of thought they might run high in the league?
No, absolutely. You know, you're not, you know. You know, I think, you still have the mystique of Pat Summitt, you know, at Tennessee, you know, but Holly's been doing a tremendous job this year. I'm not surprised by, you know, her ability to coach and get the best out of her team. And you know, and Tennessee is, you know, it's still a tradition there. It's, you know, I don't think anything changes. You know, you get people's best. And obviously she knows this league. Holly knows this league. Through, you know, backwards and frontwards, and she's put our team in a position to win the regular season championship, and you know, and have some momentum going into postseason play. But I'm not surprised she would get my vote,
now,
without a doubt, for Coach of the Year.
Now, Coach, the SEC used to be this high scoring, up and down the court type of conference, and now. Yeah, you bring in the defensive intensity, and now you've got Coach Blair, and Coach Schaefer is known for his defense. And it seems like, and then, of course, Terry Williams-Fornoy comes in, and which he has at Auburn. you know, this has turned into a 180 degree direction and is now a defensive stalwart, the teams in this conference.
Well, I mean, I think you know, for us, I'll just speak on us in that, you know, we can't get the type of players that some of the upper echelon teams in this league can get, you know, because we're still trying to build a tradition here. So, you know, who I have to recruit are, you know, blue collar workers that aren't afraid to, you know, defend, you know, and rebound. And those are, you know, two things that are, you know, decisions. They're not skill, they're decisions. Until we're able to get some more skill in here, and like I said, to be able to, you know, have somebody, you know, a go-to player that we can put the ball in their hands and they make plays at the end of basketball games, we have to play that certain way, you know. And it is what my entire coaching career has been based on, the ability to defend and rebound, because you don't know when you're going to be able to, you know, get, you know, a point here or there. Certainly, you know, with our free throw woes, you know, it's difficult. And we did have a special play at Temple when I was at Temple, and Candace Dupree, who we could put the ball in her hands, and we know we could get something good out of it. We're just not there yet. We got a team full of, we're more team oriented than anything. And, you know, in order for us to be successful, we got to do it on the defensive end. We gotta make stops. We can't afford, you know, for people to score in the high 50s. This decreases our chances of winning. But I think with the quality of players in our league, from an offensive standpoint, people can score the ball. You know, Tennessee got people that can score the ball. Texas A&M's got people that can score the ball. Kentucky's got people that can score the ball, create their own shot. So, you know, at some point, something's got to give. You know, either whose strength is going to win out, whether it's going to be the strength of what people are able to do defensively or offensively. And for us, for the most part, we've been able to, our defense has been able to, you know, hold true to form.
You know, you mentioned Candace, and before Candace got there, I mean, one of the things that I kind of thought you did to keep things going is that your early teams were in your image, you know, they were backcourt oriented and all, but when Candace got there in the post, you were kind of willing to change it up because you saw her talents and realized now you had to make your guards, you know, make it an inside, outside game. You know, in coaching, when you start getting the good players like you are, and you've had one system, because we're seeing some situations elsewhere where that debate goes on, is do you stay with the system or do you try to kind of be flexible, you know, once you can get those great players?
Oh, you have to play, you know, you have to coach according to your personnel. You know, you can't put around a square peg in a round hole. You know, a couple of years ago when I was at Temple, I asked our team if they wanted to play man or zone. They said zone, and it broke my heart. It broke my heart. But, you know, we ended up playing a lot more zone than I'd like to because they believed in it. They wanted to play it. You know, they were pretty good at it. But, you know, I went against what I, you know, kind of believe in. I'm a more man-to-man defensive team coach. So, you know, I got to go with what our players really feel good about. And, you know, that's it. So we have open dialogue about, you know, how we should play different things from an offensive and defensive standpoint, because I feel like, you know, they have to feel good about what they're doing. Doesn't mean that, you know, I changed my whole philosophy about basketball. No, but I think it really is a give and take. So you have to, if you got players that's savvy enough and understand the game enough where you could have a, you know, a conversation like that, I'll listen to them. You know, because I, you know, I'm all for, you know, keeping the lines of communication open, because they got to feel good about, you got to feel good about how they're playing out there on the floor.
Coach, if you were going to discuss specifically the Philadelphia player and what Philly, you know, the area itself, what it brought to you and the impact that it has on, you know, the decision making that you made as a player and as a coach, What would you say to our listeners would be the thing that defines Philly in basketball most to you?
We really hate to lose. So, I mean, we're just really competitive. And it's, you know, it's not, you know, we would do anything to win. I think we do go about it the right way. We just don't like to lose. And we're okay if we gave our best effort and we came up a little short. But we just don't like to lose. That's what we have in common. The fans, you know, goes from, you don't even have to be a player. You can be a fan of the sport. You know, our Philadelphia Eagles fans, Phillies fans, you know, they understand the game. They understand what they're cheering for. They understand how the game should be played, the sport should be played, and they want to see it played that way. And they know more times than not, if we play it the way it's supposed to be played, we're going to be victorious and we're going to be successful.
Coach,
and that's what I bring as a coach. I know the things. I know how to be successful in the game of basketball. And a lot of it has, you know, a lot of it has carried over to real life situations. So, you know, for us, we just have to be, you know, we're disciplined. We're disciplined in our sport, whatever that sport is.
Coach, with Coop getting in first a couple of years ago, and then, of course, Therese Edwards is well overdue, and now you being up for Naismith, is this really a validation for the WNBA now and what you guys have done as professionals, and, of course, the ABL win in your case as
mm-hmm.
well, because I always thought the ABL was better, by the way. Is it a validation for the professional women's basketball leagues now that you guys are starting to get up for that nomination?
Yes, you know, I don't believe, you know, I don't believe probably me in particular, you know, would be a candidate or got nominated if it weren't for what I was able to do in college and then after college, being in the American public's eye. I think it would have taken a little bit longer for me to make it just on the merits of what I was able to do in college. I think the fact that the 1996 Olympics were held in Atlanta, and that year prior to us playing in the Olympic Games, that we toured around America and United States, and people got to see us play in the primes of our careers. And then the WNBA comes along, and it just keeps your career in the public eye, and they really, you know, people really, you know, do they research. I think the fact that the internet helps keeps your career out there, and people want to know more and more about you for those who didn't see you play during your college career. I don't think that happens, not this quickly, because I'm shocked that it's happened this quickly for me. But I think all of those things contributed to me being nominated.
I was just going to say, speaking of WNBA, you know, we have three seniors coming out this year, in our backyard, back home here in Elena Deladon, and, in Skyler and Brittany. How much time do you think it'll take for them to adapt to the WNBA? Because I think you still have to, no matter what people predict, you still have to kind of just adjust a little bit. But I don't know how much of them you've been able to see on, TV or whatever. What are you kind of see in their early careers?
They all have that it factor. They all have it. You can tell. You know, I'm amazed at Brittany Griner's growth. I mean, she's improved every single year, and it's a beautiful thing to see because, you know, a lot of times, you know, you have someone like her, just, you know, big, you know, they don't grow. They don't grow. They don't progress individually. And she's done that. Skylar's had, I watched Skylar, recruited her when she was in high school. And she's just grown, mature. If you hear her do an interview, she understands the game. She can talk the game. She can walk the game. She can just flat out play. And then you got, you know, Deladon, who I've watched her career as well. I mean, she doesn't back down from anybody. You know, I think she's definitely talented. They all are talented, but they rise to the occasion, you know, in big game situations. So, you know, I think they will rise to the occasion to play in the WNBA. Will they have some, you know, transition? Absolutely, because, you know, to be one of, I think there are only about, what, 80 WNBA players? 8 teams, 10 teams, I mean, 10 players each. So the fat is cut from the league, if there was any fat in the league. So the league is lean and full of players who are fighting for to keep their jobs. So they will have some transition going into the league, but they'll have some big nights. They will have some big nights that probably no other lottery pick will have or have had.
You know, Coach, we got to get you into the Naismith because, you know, this, otherwise there's no teams left for you. They're gone. You know, we got to keep the record straight somehow, but, you know, the Charlotte's gone and Houston's gone. You know, was this the Staley kiss of death? Is that what it was?
Well, you know, I hope so. You know, I think, I've always, you know, and I don't say this very often. I wanted to be an Olympian, and I wanted to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. You know, one of those things, you know, I do believe both of those things are really out of your control because, you know, there are committees that pick those things. But it's a committee of people who, you know, understand and aren't going to let you just become a part of the Olympic Club or the Naismith Hall of Fame Club just because of your name. They really look at your body of work to see if you fit into this profile. And, you know, it's something that it really defines your career. It defines how much work you put into it, and it defines why I play the game. Although I played it because it was, you know, real pure and innocent. And, you know, those two entities, USA Basketball and the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, are two areas in which you get in based on the merits of your ability.
Coach, you know, as we move to wrap this up, I'll ask my last question. So now that Ariema broke the college door back down, you know, let's talk coaching. You know, the Olympic certainly would be something that's very high on your list, I would assume.
Yes, I mean, it's something that I've USA Basketball has been such a big part of my career, you know, and only because of how, you know, it's basketball utopia for me. You know, it's a place in which you don't bring in your paper clippings, you don't bring in, you know, you do bring in your household names and all of that stuff, but when it's time to win a gold medal for your country, you know, people come together as one. And it's no, I scored this many points, I played this many minutes, it's no stat watching. It is 12 players come together for one common goal. And that's not always the case. It wasn't always the case when I was in college. It wasn't always the case when I was in the WNBA. It's not always the case when I'm coaching here in South Carolina or at Temple University. But that is the one place in which, you know, you throw everything out the door. You're just trying to win a gold medal. And who wouldn't want to be a part of that?
No.
Well, I'll say, since we're going to wrap up in terms of Philly, I know over at Ohio State with Coach Foster there that if you come visit him, you know, you're not allowed into Columbus if you're coming from Philly unless you bring a cheesesteak or a soft pretzel or something like that.
Daily News.
As a Daily News. I was going to say, you got the same requirements down there in in Columbia?
Just the Daily News, and if you're coming, you know, through the airport, yes, definitely a pretzel. I don't eat meat anymore, Mel, so I can't do the cheesesteak thing. But I do. We often talk about eating at the trucks along Montgomery. When I was at Temple, they do have a veggie cheesesteak that I miss so much. So next time I see you, Mel, go down there 13th and Montgomery and get me a veggie cheesesteak.
All you have to do is keep it fresh to get a hold of you.
Hey, come on, you're giving them free publicity here. Let's make sure that they hear this and we can get them to send it to you. Come on.
About that.
every week.
Every week.
That's right. You need one at least one every week, right, Coach?
I know.
Well, Coach, I want to thank you for spending a lot of time with us today. I know that you're really busy, and certainly as the conference season comes to an end, and tournament time, it's going to just amp up even more. And there is no finer representative of Philly basketball. And congratulations once again on your nomination for the Naismith Hall of Fame. You know, such a deserving person, in addition to a basketball talent. I've got fond memories of my daughter going up to you and asking you for autographs and you always being so obliging and, just a terrific person, and you deserve all the accolades you get.
Oh, I appreciate it. And I want to thank you guys for all you've done to, keep women's basketball in the spotlight. It's certainly your work doesn't go unnoticed, and we appreciate all you do.
Mel, anything exciting coming up this week that we need to know about?
Yeah, we have a lot going on in Philly. I know Dawn follows some of this. In fact, it's Dawn reads Philly Hoops on the internet. You know, she and I are creatures of the night, and that's how we got to do this, because she said, what about those people from Philly that are coaching outside Philly? But we have in the Ivy League around here, as you know, Princeton, just to the north of us, continues to tear it up. But the new number two team is Penn, which goes into New England this weekend to play Harvard and Dartmouth. And I've kind of nicknamed them, those other seven, the Mortal Seven, and Penn's now in front. So if they can finish second, they can go to WNIT. So that's kind of big right in town. It was a tough loss for St. Joe, but they finish up Sunday. They got to go to Dayton, and this is their best shot in a long, long time to get to the NCAAs. So, we have that going on. And you mentioned Delaware and Drexel. I mean, we had a good one yesterday. I was at where Delaware's streak almost got broken. They beat James Madison by a point, and now Drexel, which is also in the hunt for a good seed in the CAA, they're there Sunday, and that's going to be another sellout. So, I mean, that's just a few of the things going on right now. February frenzy leads to March Madness. That's actually by Sunday.
I keep up with your timeline, Mel. There's not too much that goes unnoticed. So I may not retweet you or say anything, but I'm watching. I'm twatching.
Yeah, some coaches do that. Then I got other coaches that stalk. There's some of them, I won't name them, but the minute I put out a tweet, bang, they're right back on me in about 20 seconds, no matter what time of the day it is. There's a few of us that go across the threshold. Well, I know we'll be seeing you in New Orleans. You and I have great memories of several trips down there in the past in various modes. It was a tough one that year, you as a player, and later years, the referees, when Debbie went into the Hall of Fame, later said they made a mistake, so at least we got that out of them.
How about that?
In that Final Four. So we're looking forward to seeing you. We'll track you during the tournament, and we'll be pressing those real soon.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Everybody take care, and thanks again, everybody, for listening to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' Philly Style here on PhillyHoopsW.com.